You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Let's talk more about being Black and a gun owner. With us are Tanisha Mohner, a gun owner with multiple certifications, including Chief Range Safety Officer and an NRA certified instructor. And Chad Kings, co-founder of the Black Bottom Gun Club. This is the Detroit chapter of the National African American Gun Association. Tanisha, why did you first decide to buy a gun?
Well, it was a long process. I had friends who were concerned about my well-being because I did move around a lot solo, you know, by myself. And so I had friends who were trying to convince me, you know, you shouldn't be out unarmed. You should be able to fight fire with fire. And I really had no interest, and I was scared of guns. So one day I finally decided I would, like, defeat that, you know, beat my fear, and I went and took a CPL class, and that's where it all started.
And, Chad, you grew up in an anti-gun household, right?
Absolutely. I grew up in a single-parent home, single mother, and my mother was vehemently against firearms, water guns, Nerf guns, making guns with rubber bands, you name it. She was totally against it at the time. But I think that was more so of a product or a result of where I grew up at. And the neighborhood that I grew up at was susceptible to gun violence.
Tell us how you grew up to become a strong advocate for gun ownership.
There was, a confluence of a couple of different things. One of the things that I learned, you know, fairly early on is that there have always been two rights that have been the litmus test for Black Americans being fully fledged and fully enfranchised citizens of the United States. First and foremost, voting, and secondly, exercising the Second Amendment. And I look at that from a historical lens to a degree. There have always been efforts to curtail people's, particularly Black Americans, ability to vote, and there have always been efforts to curtail Black Americans' ability to own firearms for self-defense and protecting their families. So that was part of it. The other part of it was an unfortunate incident on my wedding anniversary in 2007. My wife and I came home early from celebrating. We came in and saw our home. We lived in a townhouse, and everything was busted open. The door was kicked open off the frame and hinges. We saw everything strewn about. Some things were missing. Department maintenance folks weren't able to get anyone to fix the door until very early the next morning. So I took my wife that night. I went and bought a shotgun to make sure that we would be safe.
And now here you are as the co-founder of the Detroit chapter of the National African American Gun Association. Tanisha, as we heard in Sarah's story, it was very clear. Suwatu Sulama Ra said she was treated differently by the justice system as a Black woman. And she said, I was so afraid, especially for my toddler and mother. I don't believe they could imagine a Black woman being scared, only mad. Does that quote resonate with you?
Absolutely. Too frequently, Black women are viewed as having, you know, a chip on our shoulder, or we have an attitude problem, or we have all these other negative things that are just ingrained inherently in Black people, in the minds of some people. However, we are absolutely fearful just like anyone else. We worry about our lives just like anyone else. Even before this situation here, we see it all the time. Black women aren't viewed as possible victims in the way that other people are. And I really think it's sad. It's not fair.
And so you feel you're treated differently as a Black woman carrying a gun?
My experience overall has been fairly positive for the most part. I do know people who haven't been as fortunate as myself, though.
In fact, Chad, do you have other stories that come to mind of coming into contact with authorities as a legal gun owner?
As for myself personally, I haven't had that experience, and I hope to keep it that way, which is a big reason why I'm a proponent of concealed carry. But as far as stories go from other people, you know, when you look through history, as Black people carrying firearms, one of the immediate stories come to mind is the story of Ossian Sweet, who purchased a home on Garland Avenue. It was in a predominantly white neighborhood in the city of Detroit. His family was accosted and harassed, and they threw rocks at his home and bricks through his window and tried to set a firebomb off in his house through the window, and him and his family were able to defend themselves. When you look at firearms laws and interaction with police, one of the things that we have to consider, Black people are not dissimilar from any other group or demographic. We have the same types of fears. We have the same type of needs and wants to be safe and secure in our person and to make sure our families are secure as well. Unfortunately, considering the slant that we find in this country, in particular the anti-black slant that we find, in addition to the different stereotypes of black people with guns, those are all things that we have to combat. And I look forward to that type of a challenge.
And we should note, certainly talking about history, Dr. Ossian Sweet was charged with murder in 1925.
Absolutely.
After he and friends were using armed self-defense against that crowd of hostile white people protesting his moving into, air quotes here, their neighborhood. So here we have history important in looking at the history of suppressing African-American rights in your own personal genealogical history. So what have you learned from being a student of history, and how has that informed your philosophy on gun ossianship, Tanisha?
Since we mentioned Ossian Sweet, I was very fortunate in the sense that my family grew up in close affiliation with the family who actually purchased the Sweet home down on Garland, and the family who saw to it that that place was preserved and recognized as a National Historic Site. So I always knew the history of that. My growing up was quite a bit different than my counterpart here. My father was absolutely pro-gun. My dad never had hang-ups about guns being in the house. My dad felt like there should be a gun in every room of his home because he believed in protecting his family.
Chad, how do you prepare or educate members of the Black Bottom Gun Club, both on responsible gun ownership and the disparate treatment that a black gun owner may face when dealing with the police or, in Ra's case, a court of law?
There's a couple of things that we do. I don't want to say that you can overemphasize safety, because I don't think it's possible to overemphasize being safe with a firearm. You have to have a different mindset when you possess a firearm and when you're in possession or control of a firearm than not, because it is a tool like any other tool, but it has the capacity to do things and alter life permanently for yourself or other people. So first and foremost, we put a huge emphasis on operating safely, being able to de-escalate situations if at all possible, things like that to deal with the mindset of what it takes to be a responsible gun owner. That's one piece of it. The other piece of it is the history and getting a clear understanding of what it means to be a black gun owner. We spoke about Dr. Ossian Sweet. You know, in our meetings, we also go over people like Robert F. Williams, who wrote Negroes with Guns, and giving, you know, our members the understanding that generally we carry firearms as a mechanism historically to defend against racialized violence. Unfortunately, today we look at Dylann Roof, right? So the racialized violence is still present in American society, and as black gun owners, we need to be prepared to defend ourselves and defend our families from that racialized violence. Now, getting with the legal component of it, what we do in our chapter, we have legal seminars roughly about every quarter, a few times a year, where we have a firearms legal expert come in and discuss different scenarios or give us an overview of Michigan law and surrounding state law scenarios, such as what happens after a self-defense shooting, the cost involved with it, how you need to prepare yourself financially and in the aftermath of it as well.
Tanisha, I know you are an NRA certified instructor, and I got to ask you, the NRA has been criticized for using some race baiting tactics to build support. Have you got any issues with those tactics of the NRA?
For full disclosure, not only am I an NRA certified instructor, I'm also a member of the NRA. I don't think any organization in any area is absolutely 100% together. I think there's room for growth and opportunity. I understand, you know, that there are issues and challenges. However, my personal experience with the NRA has been mostly positive. I haven't had any instances where I felt like I was being discriminated against. There are fringe people in every group. If you go to even some black groups, it's like, okay, you're way over here. You know, I just think we all need to learn some effective communication. I think the NRA has some very positive stand. I think some of the things they say are absolutely on point. Are there things I don't agree with? Absolutely. But that doesn't make the organization as a whole be something that should be demonized. I don't believe that.
Just final few moments of thought from you, if I could, Chad. When you think that we hear descriptions of gun violence in this country described as an epidemic, how do you see a way forward that balances your Second Amendment rights with the need to keep communities safe from gun violence?
So the data shows, at least the FBI data shows, that violent crime has actually gone down over the past 30 years. I don't see an epidemic in that, right? You hear a lot of times about AR-15s. People want to ban AR-15s, right? Roughly since about 2014 or, you know, between 2012 and 2016, less than 500 deaths total have been a result of an AR-15. You have many more times, that three or four times that amount of deaths as a result of knife violence or hand-to-hand type of a fighting, right? So what we have to do is look at two things, history, and we have to look at data. Unless we're looking at those two things, then we won't be able to craft an accurate response, and we'll be operating based on emotion. You know, firearms, they've been in our country since forever. It's a founding precept of the establishment of the United States of America. You can get involved by, number one, understanding how they operate, and number two, making sure that you're safe while operating, whether you're, you know, exercise your Second Amendment rights or not, to understand that these things are not the boogeyman. We have to deal with people on a person-to-person basis. We have to communicate more with one another. There are some countries that have a high rate of firearm ownership, but lower rate of crime. On a societal level, we have to create a culture of support that seeks to deter violence, right? Whether you're talking about economically, educationally, socially, politically, et cetera, we have to create that culture of support to deal with those things and not deal with the mechanism or tool people use.
I want to thank very much Tanisha Mohner and Chad King. Chad is co-founder of the Black Bottom Gun Club. Tanisha, gun owner, multiple certifications. We want to thank you so much for sharing your views with us on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And a quick note, numbers from the FBI's Uniform Crime Reporting Program do show that in 2016, there were more deaths by knives than by rifles, including AR-15s. That said, reporting to the FBI is voluntary. And as deaths are not broken down by rifle type in the data, there is no way to know exactly how many deaths occurred from AR-15s.